Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, bond ratings have had in the past maybe 3-4 years or so more difficulty finding bond quotes than I used to. It used to be you could just go to a lot of websites and you'd have different bonds of corporate bonds, and they give you the current quotes and ratings and all that kind of stuff. And that just kind of vanished at some point. Now it's really difficult to find just lists of bonds that I can show to classes. Part of that is that bonds are so not interesting that the typical website web people are not going to waste web space on them, because it's all about how many hits you're going to get and the ad revenue dollars because of the number of hits and that kind of stuff. And since these sites are key to more of the general public, they figure that there aren't many people in the general public who really care about bonds, even though they're a vast ocean of value. It's just that's the way it is, unfortunately. So anyway, I'm going to use Morningstar. It's not the greatest service, but it does have some of the information that I want in it. But before I do that, just a quick look at the stock markets today to just see how grim it's gotten here. And it's a dark day. And that's because we now have a real war in Eastern Europe. And it's spreading it will spread. And it could very well be a world war. We are trying to pretend that it's not our problem, but it will be eventually. And we'll finally have to get involved and think we're the heroes after many, many, many people have been killed, like we did in World War II. But there you go. We're looking right now at the Dow is down 1.25%. The S&P 500 is down a little more, higher risk and more impact, 1.38%. And then the NASDAQ is taking an absolute beating at over 2% down for the day. So there you are. Now, interestingly, the crude market is holding firm. It was down, then up, and then it's kind of flat. It's kind of hard to say where it's going to go from here, but there is definitely a wait-and-see attitude right now, and I'll show you that in a minute here. However, if we look over here at gold and silver, silver is up quite a bit. Looks like that's kind of like a place that some money is heading. Not a lot, but some. Now, bonds, the yields are up. Therefore, the yield is up 2.8 basis points, so that means that the price is down. So the price is down because investors are selling out of bonds. They're also selling out of stocks. They're really not going into metals at all. So what it looks to me like is that we are seeing cash is where the heavy investors are going. They're saying, all right, let's sell things, put it into money markets, and just wait and see what happens next, especially on the global stage. That's how it seems to me to be looking. Now, the Financial Times 100 stocks, excuse me, they started skidding off in the afternoon over there, which would have been the morning here. The reason being that it seems that there is a growing sentiment from what I heard from my contacts that this is going to be another World War II. Just like Hitler finally decided it was time to start pounding Great Britain, it looks like there are a lot of people who see too many parallels. Just like Hitler started to spread out and move, this is what Putin is doing, and eventually Great Britain will take a massive amount of impact from it, possibly the same way it did in World War II with the V2 rockets and the whole nine yards. But whether that happens or not, that's what's scaring the hell out of the markets right now over there. And the Nikkei, well, it's just down because it's the world is not in a good place right now. And Japan, for all of its belief that it can isolate itself from these problems, it knows it can't. And so there you are, a world on the brink of war, and you guys get to be front and center. Make sure you've got your draft cards ready. Okay, we'll figure out something. I don't know. Standard & Poor's 500. Look at. I want you to look at what I mean by these big players are backing off. Do you see that for the whole day, market is only an hour left. It's not even half of what it normally would be. This is the Standard & Poor's 500 stocks. All of their trading is 1.6 billion shares today. The typical day over the past 52 weeks was 3.5 billion shares. So you can see that wait and see, back off, big dogs on the sidelines, not moving a lot on this stuff. That's there's this sentiment that we don't need to be investing, buying stuff right now. We need to see what the next move is. Are we going to do more economic sanctions, and what will their impact be? Or are we going to actually step up to the plate, and with NATO, are we going to go in there and just lay waste to the Russian army? My preferences I won't share with you, but it probably would involve you guys going into combat. No, you wouldn't. Okay, here we go. Now, as far as bonds go, I gave you the basic outline, but one thing that is important, the coupon is often, one thing that drives a coupon is obviously the general interest rate environment. So if interest rates are high in the economy, coupons will tend to be high. If interest rates are lower, then coupons will tend to be lower. That's a given. However, it also has to do with the quality of the company, the riskiness of the company. Does a company have the ability to pay its interest payments if it borrows money? Does the company have the ability to do that for a long time if these are long corporate bonds? This is where rating services come in. The three big ones are Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch. Now, these Morningstar tables show you Moody's and S&P, but they don't show you the Fitch. Now, each of them has its own rating system. You can usually tell a Moody's because it's a letter and number. There's numbers in it. An S&P, most likely you're going to see more like pluses and minuses would tell you that it's an S&P rating. Usually these ratings are right together. They're pretty much the same, but not always. And these, the higher the rating, the safer the company is considered. It's like a credit score. And that means that the lower the coupon they have to pay to lenders. Okay, we go to the lenders. The lenders say, okay, you want $100 million? What's your credit? What's your rating with Standard & Poor's? Well, it's A plus, or it's A. Okay, or it's double A or something like that. Okay, we will set the interest rate at this. It's very much driven, that coupon is, by that rating. Now, I'll give you a couple of stories about that. One of them is a personal story, and then one is a story reeling forward. In the late 1990s, I was very busy as a consultant helping companies go public, stay public, raise capital, the whole nine yards. And I had one company that was pretty strong. It had gone through a prototype phase, and it had an interesting technology. I can't tell you a whole lot because of non-disclosure agreements, but essentially it had a high energy density battery technology. Well, that's great because the more energy a battery has, the longer it lasts and the more things it can power and all that. But this one was a little bit unusual. It was a battery that was shapeable. It was like a sheet, and you could literally cut it or wrap it around things. It was kind of a neat idea, and they were getting some press and some attention. And they had already common stock outstanding. It was publicly traded. I got them a trading symbol. And they said, well, we don't want to sell more stock. It's time we looked at issuing some corporate bonds, $10 million worth of corporate bonds. And so they said, well, how do we go about this? So I said, well, the first thing you're going to need to do is get a rating so that if we go to the investment bankers, they can go to their big money people and say, well, this company's got this rating, so will you lend them $10 million? Okay, good. Well, I was, of course, I had no idea how to do this. I had never worked with bonds in that way before. And, of course, just telling you how it worked, I got nothing. I knew the rating services. I didn't know how the ratings were obtained. And back then, the internet wasn't anything like it is now. There were websites, but it was mostly still at that time geeks and all that. But I did find Moody's, where you call the number in New York City, you call, and I called in there and I just played this stupid guy. Help me out here. Tell me how we do this. And the lady with whom I spoke after I'd gotten through the operator, the front desk, was very helpful. She said, okay, well, the way we do it is you provide us with all the financial information. In other words, the SEC filings, plus all additional information you can on the company, and we probably will ask you for more, and we'll go through this process. I said, well, this is great. And she said, I'm going to fax you some documents right now to get you started. I thought, this is awesome. I said, okay, big question, how much is this going to cost? And she said, well, in a company that's just starting out, we're going to have a fee of $10,000. And I think that was the number she quoted. And I, ooh, okay, we'll do it. And I said, well, how long will this ratings process take? She said, about 6 months. God. She said, well, we do have an expedited service, and it's faster, and we are much more favorable to you with this expedited service. Really? How much is this? She quoted $500,000. And, of course, you know, inside me, I was just, are you out of your mind? And I was, $500,000. And you say that'll get us a good rating. She said, we'll find ways to get it for you. Yep, that was how it worked. Okay, then. All righty, then. Okie dokie, then. And I thought, how am I? Yeah. I mean, I was dealing with a company whose officers and directors were Texans, and they carried guns. And I thought, I really don't want to say this number to these guys when they could pull out the guns and end me right there and then. But that was how it worked. Yeah, so that got me my first kind of sour taste of the rating system. Yes, I'm sure it's fine, but at the same time, there's obviously a juicer in there. No question. Well, let's reel forward to the 2000s. Now, this one isn't a personal story. This is just what happened. The 2008 financial crisis caused extraordinary catastrophe in the financial system of the world, and even in the United States a lot, but across the planet. One of the worst things that happened was that many corporations, trusts, and other entities had portfolios of bonds, safe, right? Bonds are safer than stock. They have the prior claim on the cash flows, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Well, these bonds started tailing massively. I mean, the market value of these bonds was collapsing. What the hell is this all about? And so you had a bank on its books, might have $100 million of book value on bonds, but those bonds had collapsed to virtually nothing in reality. That's what we call the toxic assets, the TARP, the Toxic Asset Recovery Program, all that kind of stuff. Why were they doing this? Oh, these bonds were actually composites. Inside of those bonds were derivatives. Collateralized debt obligations, CDOs, collateralized mortgage obligations, CMOs, all kinds of extraordinarily risky stuff. And yet, Standard & Poor's had rated these as triple fricking A. That's why they were in the corporate portfolios, is because the charters of the policies of these corporations don't invest in anything below AAA or don't invest in anything below AA. So they were investing in these in good faith that those credit ratings were valid. And yet they were not. They were rotten in the core. Standard & Poor's knew it. They couldn't have been that stupid that they didn't open up the bonds and look at them before they gave them the ratings. But because they were paid all that money, they gave them the ratings that would get them the buyers in the financial intermediaries market. Well, this all came out. Standard & Poor's, the U.S. government, prosecuted, and they fined the hell out of Standard & Poor's. Standard & Poor's was lucky they didn't get criminal charges against them for that, for their malfeasance. So what does Standard & Poor's do? They downgraded the credit rating of U.S. Treasury bonds. That was how they dealt with this. They downgraded the safest debt instruments on the planet, in spite for what the government had done to them, spanking their asses for what they had done to the finance industry of the world. So my taste for Standard & Poor's and the trustworthiness, all it did was just pretty much solidify my suspicions about those ratings. What that means for you is this. The ratings are something you need to look at, yes, but you have enough learning from this class, enough education, that you can open up the box yourself and look in it for yourself. Look at the company. Look at its debt structure. How much debt does it have? Look at its times interest earned. How many times over can it pay its interest with the operating income that's available to do that? Use your own judgment in the end. You've got the education. I wouldn't say this to the average idiot on the street, the same person who thinks that there are green aliens shape-shifting among us in the government. No, this is for the educated, that we have to be more careful. When you're in corporate America, and if you're responsible for handling investments, don't just say, well, Moody says that's a damn good deal, A1 rating. Look for yourself. Use their rating as a preliminary guide, but it doesn't hurt for you to crack it open and look inside for a while and see if it's right. If you're investing for your family, and bonds look like a good thing in a bad economy, you move to bonds, flight to quality. Look at the bonds to make sure that those ratings are reasonable for those bonds. In other words, you're the people who have to use the old saying, trust but verify, or the other one, the first rule of warfare, don't assume intentions, only capabilities. And as was the big motto of the X-Files, trust no one. With that in mind, have a look at some bonds here. Okay, 3M. Now, some of these are callables. Callables are a little riskier than normal bonds because in a callable bond, the company at some point has the right to pull in the bond and pay it off before maturity. So, for example, you, madam, might have a want to borrow money from me. You're going to issue $100 million, 6% coupon, which seems reasonable for the risk of the company. Okay, good news. Okay, but in fact, you say, but I can call this bond in after year 5. So if interest rates drop to 4%, you can pay me off and reborrow at 4%. Now, for me, that sucks because I was expecting to get 6% for all those years for maybe a 20 or 30-year bond. And there you are dropping it on me. So a callable bond does have a little bit of an extra risk premium in it simply because of the possibility that the lender could have the rug pulled out from under him. Mortgages are callable bonds. Home mortgages are callable bonds because you can refi. Now, usually banks will charge you points if you do a refi, especially early on. But you can call in the bond. Well, you know, I got this mortgage at 4.99%, but my goodness, mortgages are now going off 5 years later at 3.85, so I'm going to refinance at 3.85. The bank is not going to like that. That means that that refi privilege is going to cause that 4.99 to be a little bit higher because of the call provision in there. So just keep an eye on that when we look at these. Now, if I look at 3M here, here's a bond that's due in only 2 years. It has a very low coupon. Do you see that coupon is only 0.695%? Interest rates have been so, but however, the thing of it is that this bond was probably issued 20 years ago. So this bond is actually probably was issued in 2004. It might be a 30, so it would have been issued in 1994. But it's coming due very soon. So notice how the price is very close to par. There's not much time left on it, so it doesn't matter if the market thinks it should be more than that. It's just too close to par. But notice here, this bond was issued, if this one was issued in 2004, and they're both 20 year, this one was issued in 2009. Notice that the coupon is higher. Now that could be due to one of two factors. The company was a little riskier in 2009, or the economy's interest rates were higher in 2009. But I also notice, do you see that this bond is callable, which means that that's probably part of why that coupon is higher. Go down here, and we look at some more. Notice that these two are identical because they were same issue, same year that they were issued. Same maturity, same rating probably. So they're about the same, but no, they're not. Why would this bond due later be at a lower coupon than this bond if they were issued very close to each other in time? There's the key. I would bet you that this bond was issued, this is a 30-year. Might not be, but I think it's a 30-year. So this bond was issued in 1999, and the interest rates were probably lower in 1999 than they were in 2009. That would explain this difference, and this is a definite difference in those coupons. We have this one that is due next year, and that's got a low interest rate. So you notice that these two are closer together. Probably a year's interest rate difference in the economy as a whole. Going down through here, let me look at find something else. Bentley, energy companies. This one's due very soon. You notice how it's very close to par value, 1,000. Now these are quotes. That's not $101.40. That's actually $1,014. All bonds are quoted at a tenth of their price. It's a historical artifact from the days many centuries ago when all these prices were put on giant broadsheets printed every morning. So they saved space by putting the bonds at a tenth of their price. Where else? I wanted to find something. Oh, 20th Century Fox. Now, look at these. The WR, they're not, Moody's isn't reporting for them. But it's different from a blank. Moody's just isn't reporting this. But do you see that these 21st Century Fox bonds have only a BBB+ rating? Remember I said that if you have pluses and minuses, you're probably looking at a Standard & Poor's rating. Yeah, this one is actually not as safe as those 3M bonds were because it's got a lower credit rating score, BBB+. Now, some would consider that still investment grade. Others would say, nah, that's a little too low. A lot of times the policy of a company that wants to invest money in bonds, they say nothing below A. So these are, and notice that the coupons are higher. Do you see how these are higher coupons? This bond, well, that could not have been a 20-year bond. You see how it's due in 43? So 2023 hasn't happened. So this must have been a 2000, no. This would have to have been a 1993 bond. And that would be explained, interest rates were pretty steep then. This is a risky bond. And so that's why that coupon is a little on the high side for the current era. And you're saying, well, look at this one. This one's got a big coupon on it. No rating. That would explain a lot right there. This is risky because there's no rating on it. What am I looking at here? These are, now I want to point out this. Do you see how many bonds there are outstanding just of this company? I'll explain that in a little bit. But it's clear, my God. Oh, that's another company. I was going to say, look at that thing. No ratings. Look at that coupon. That coupon is a hell of a coupon. Just because this is a very risky debt instrument. So, and it's also junk. You see these prices that are way below 100? Those are junk bonds. Those are so bad that they don't even have yields being reported. 3M. I'm going to pull one more 3M. Holy cow! New Day Fellowship? Well, that's scary. I don't even recognize a lot of these. There's so many companies out there. 7-Elevens. Look at those. Look at those little coupons on those. Even the ones that are callable have relatively low coupons. But you're saying, well, wait a minute. We're looking at some of these, and why are these so much higher, some of them? If they're all callable, obviously there's a call premium. But some of these have higher coupons than others of them. Okay, so these are clearly not investment-grade bonds. Do you see that? Those are Bs. Anytime you see a B in any of the ratings, that means that it's not exactly investment-grade. You see a C, and you say, oh, that's definitely junk. But interestingly enough, these are not even rated here, and they are... Whew, those things are look suspiciously like junk. Wow. These must have just been issued. These are new issue. Coupon of 2.8%, no ratings, and they're already junk. They're already junk. That would tell me that the market is really worried about 7-Eleven right now being able to satisfy its debts. I wanted to look at one. Whoa, Church of God? And they've got high coupons? Well, that's rude. I mean, well, what are they saying? Wow. Church of God bonds at 8% coupons. That's a lot. They don't even have yields being reported on them. They have no credit ratings. So I'm not even going to venture into that because I don't want to go to hell that way explaining those. I'll just leave that there and walk on, move on from there, if you don't mind. But you get the idea. The coupon is telling you both about the environment. Remember that coupon, once it's set at the issue, it's that coupon ever after that. So if 7-Eleven starts to get riskier and riskier after it's issued those 8% coupon bonds, that means the price of that bond is going to go tailing downward because the market's going to drive the yield upward. So these bonds, I'm looking at these Church of God bonds, and, well, they're actually, I mean, I don't know why they're not reporting yields on some of those, but let me find something so I don't get into trouble. AAD. I'd like to see something that I can even, at least mention, say something about. But okay. What the? Oh, I see. Abbott. There you go. Now, ooh, look at these. Do you see this bond selling at a really high premium to par? That would tell me that that coupon is way too high for what the market thinks it should be. This is like a candy bond. You buy this bond, and you're getting a lot better coupon than the company really should pay. And so the market is driving the price of that thing way up above 1,000. So those are selling at a premium to par. Now, after the exam is over and the smoke is cleared, I'll show you the math of these. It's just calculator math. But that kind of clarifies what's going on here. But you notice these are reputable bonds. Abbott's, all of them are good. Now you notice that one that's a 6.15%, do you see how much of a premium to par it's selling at? That should be close to 100. It's not. It's way above 100. But you notice that as the coupon goes down, they get closer to par value. In other words, 6% is way more than the company should be paying. But 2, 3%, that's more likely to be the investors aren't going to go crazy buying these bonds down here. But this one, that one's out of line. Now, let me go through here and explain some of the background that causes these differences in coupons and yields, but coupons mostly. Companies issue lots. Once a company's in business, it will issue bonds quite often. Now, the thing about it is that the highest priority bonds are always the mortgage bonds, okay? They're always the highest because that's an asset that can be liquidated and belongs to those lenders if they liquidate it. Now, this is a bankruptcy thing. Okay, here we go. Suppose the highest level, and we're ignoring mortgage versus debenture, but for the time being, are the senior bonds. They would get the first crack at the assets in liquidation if the company goes bankrupt. They are the priority bonds. They will have the lowest coupons, all other things being equal, because they are the first to get paid in bankruptcy. Now, underneath those, you would probably have subordinated. You might even have a couple of different subordinateds, senior subordinateds. They would be second in line. And I'm simplifying this a little bit, but it's pretty much accurate. Now then, you get to the junior bonds. Those would be the ones that were issued later. They are down the food chain in a liquidation. And then underneath those, you would have the junior subordinateds. And there are all kinds of little nuances in here you can talk about. But that's a basic outline. It works like that. Now, suppose that this company can't pay its interest payments. It goes into default. Now, the first thing that's going to happen is, as soon as the company can't pay an interest payment, the creditors, the bondholders and all the others are going to go after it and try to liquidate it. Immediately, they'll try to liquidate it. The company will counter by filing for bankruptcy protection under Chapter 11. This means that a bankruptcy court, steps in and says, freeze what you're doing, debt holders. Do not proceed. By court order. And then the court orders everyone, the corporation and all the debt holders, to come to the table to try to work out a reorganization, what we call a reorg. Now, the reorg would have essentially, it would work in some way where the corporation would say, look, we can't pay you everything. Can you lower your interest payments, reorganize the debt? We'll do this, this, and this if you will lower your interest payments, the coupons. Essentially reissue at a lower rate. And again, the company says, we'll do this, this, and this. We'll fire a lot of people, blah, blah, blah. the shareholders are pretty much done. They got nothing. This will all be the debt holders and the corporation. Now, what will happen is there will be negotiations by the trustee, the bondholders, trustees, and the corporation will try to work out a deal. If a deal is made, the reorg is submitted to the bankruptcy court. We have all agreed to this. All the lawyers come in and say, Your Honor, we have agreed to this. And then the plan of emerging from the bankruptcy will proceed. From chapter 11. If that doesn't work, this is yes. If it's a no, then it goes to chapter 11, chapter 7, and the company is liquidated. Everything is liquidated. So let's say that the senior debt is $30 million. And let's say that the subordinated, let me bring that a little closer, and the senior subordinated stands at $12 million, and the junior stands at $10 million, and the junior subordinated stands at $6 million. That's what the company owes face value, the face value of the debts at the different levels of the hierarchy. Okay, so chapter 7 has initiated, and the company is liquidated for a value of $44 million. Okay, so senior gets 30 million. That leaves 14 million. The senior subordinated gets satisfied, and that leaves $2 million, which then gets that $2 million goes to there. And they are brought down to $8 million. And there's nothing left for these people. So you can see that the juniors get only 20 cents on the dollar, and the junior subordinateds get nothing on the dollar. You see it all? It's not hard. I mean, this is one of those questions I could ask on an exam, and all you have to do is some simple math. I could just say, okay, how much do the juniors get? I could give you a story just like this and say, how much do the juniors get? And if the liquidation value is this. And really, it boils down to very little more than this. So I want you to notice something interesting here. Do you see that the farther down the hierarchy you go, the more interested you are in having a reorg succeed? Because you see, and the seniors, they don't give a crap. They're happy. Yeah, let's liquidate. No reorg. We're not even coming to the table for a reorg. Or they'll put on insanely hard terms that the company can't meet because they're going to get their money. So will the subordinateds, senior subordinateds. It's the juniors and the junior subordinateds who are going to be all kinds of excited about having that company survive, come out of the bankruptcy, chapter 11, and move on and try to come back to life. That's how it works in the real world. The seniors are going to be the worst nightmare for a reorg because they are going to get theirs in liquidation and they can move on and invest in something else. It's those juniors and those junior subordinates who are going to say, let's give this company a chance here, guys, because that's the only way they're going to get a penny is if it comes out of reorg successfully. Okay, now, little side story here about this. The bondholders are not those bondholders there, they are not the only debt holders. The suppliers who are owed money, those accounts payable, they're going to get, they need to be a part of this. The employees who didn't get their last paycheck, wage workers and salaried workers, they're going to be debtors too, and they need to have. They want to have a say. They would probably be very excited about a reorg instead of just being told you're fired, go away. There's no corporation anymore. The building has just been reduced to rubble and turned into a car wash. And interestingly enough, and this is the upshot, the customers who have already ordered merchandise that's sitting in the warehouse waiting to ship, they are part of the debt holder class as well. Interestingly enough, and I think this one actually went to the Supreme Court some years ago, there was a company that went into Chapter 11, and the inventory that had not shipped, the company had stopped shipping about a month and a half before because the shippers said, you don't pay us, we're not shipping. So there was this pile of inventory that had been paid for by customers that was waiting to ship when the company declared bankruptcy, Chapter 11, and what was in that warehouse was frozen. Do not send it. It is part of the overall. So it was part of the liquidation. Now, the customers didn't have hardly any legal representation, like one sort of sad lawyer. And he said, you know, come on, that belongs to those people. They ordered it. They paid for it. The bankruptcy court said, no, they don't. They don't get anything anymore. They're just way down there on the list. After all the fat cats have been paid, that's when maybe they'd get something. They got obviously nothing. And those orders that had been waiting for shipment, they were just sold out and they ended up someplace like Odd Lots or something like that, for heaven's sake. From a fairness perspective, that is what we would technically call bullshit. But in the reality of corporate finance, they didn't get anything because they were so low down on the priority list on that list, I would have to have been writing on the floor to get to them. Even a lot of the suppliers got screwed in that. Suppliers who'd already supplied stuff, and they had billed, and the bills were just not paid, and they became part of the debtor class at the Chapter 11 proceedings. They saw nothing in that either. There were an awful lot, and quite often, there are a lot of people who get really honked off by how this bankruptcy trick works. Reorgs, I mean, if a reorg is actually going to be worked out and the court's going to approve it, I mean, those are giant, powerful lawyers, trustees, bondholder trustees, and other people who wear very important suits are going to be the ones who get listened to in this whole proceeding. So there is that. Now, one more thing, though, I should point out. Companies that emerge from reorg generally come out damaged. They've gone through an expensive process of getting this done. They've probably ended up getting all kinds of really harsh conditions put on them by the heavies. you will not do this, this, and this for this many years, and you will fire this many people, and you will close down half of your outlets, blah, blah, blah. It's really hard on them. And another thing that happens are the private equity funds. They'll come in and they'll say, oh, you know, look, you're in bankruptcy, you're in a reorg, we can get you out of it. You owe all that money there. Okay, I'll tell you what. We're going to consolidate that into a loan. How much is that? 42, 52, 58 million? We'll get you $80 million. We'll lend it to you. We'll take care of you. Now, you're going to get only $70 million because we got to get our fee. You're also going to issue us a pile of stock for free, but we'll get you out and you'll be in business again. You'll follow our conditions, you'll move your factories over to China, you'll fire a lot of employees, but you will be made whole and we'll shut those people up over there. We'll give them their money. And all you'll have is one big bond, ours, to take care of. That is done. That's how a lot of private equity can be very successful. You see, but the problem is, of course, I lent you $80 million, but you've got only $70 million to work with because of my fee. You also gave me a pile of stock, so the first thing I'm going to do is pump that up. We've saved this company. Everyone buy this stock. It's really great. And then we'll dump that stock on you. And then when you fail anyway, we'll liquidate your ass because we're the only bondholder and we won't reorg. You got it? That's private equity, sometimes known as vulture capitalism. It's dirty, it's nasty, it's evil, it's Satan's work on earth. And that's why I'm working on getting one put together in Central America, a private equity fund. Why are you wrecking this company? Because it's wreckable. Welcome to capitalism. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.